to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. The COVID-19 vaccine is offering hope that things can get back to pre-pandemic speed. But there are still concerns to consider before returning to live concerts, restaurants, and workplaces. Even as health officials loosen public safety measures, many people remain weary of public gatherings. We'll check in to see what's improving and what measures remain in place as COVID cases decline in different areas. We go live right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The United Nations is getting involved in a fisheries dispute on Canada's east coast. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, a UN committee is to consider a complaint of racism against the Canadian government by Native fishers in Nova Scotia.
A United Nations Committee on Racial Discrimination wants to hear what the Canadian government has to say about the allegations. The charge is that it committed racist actions in its treatment of Mi'kmaq lobster fishers, and Canada's permanent representative to the UN is being asked to respond. The Sipiknakadak First Nation argues that it has a right to a moderate livelihood when and where its members wish, based on a ruling from Canada's Supreme Court. But Ottawa says that moderate livelihood must take place within the commercial fishing season. Last year, violence erupted against Native fishers, a lobster pound was destroyed, and a band member's van was set on fire. Chief Mike Sack says he doesn't want that to happen this year.
We're going to send a letter off to the United Nations and hoping that they can come and keep the peace. And it was very obvious to me that we couldn't rely on the RCMP or DFO.
The Department of Fisheries and Oceans says closed lobster seasons are there for conservation purposes. Talks with the Sipiknakadak band broke down earlier this year. The First Nation says it's planning to resume a self-regulated lobster season in June outside of the federal seasons. The UN says it's looking at allegations that the RCMP failed to take appropriate measures to prevent acts of violence and to protect the fishers and their properties from being vandalized. It wants to know what the Canadian government has done to deal with the allegations of racism. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Nearly 30 Indigenous advocacy groups are condemning the work of a presidential task force on missing and murdered Indigenous person cases. Yellowstone Public Radio's Caitlin Nicholas reports.
On National Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Awareness Day, the groups issued a statement on Operation Lady Justice, claiming the presidential task force established in 2019 has been, quote, continuously inflicting harm on MMIWG and MMIP families and showing disrespect to the movement, end quote. The statement says no significant outreach was done to engage with impacted families and grassroots advocates, and an inadequate number of task force listening sessions were scheduled.
I'm so sorry if you hear my dogs barking in the background.
Anita Lucchesi is the executive founding director of Sovereign Bodies Institute, an Indigenous-led research nonprofit that maintains a large database of missing and murdered Indigenous people. Lucchesi was a guest last Wednesday on a panel providing updates on the case of Kaysera Stops Pretty Places, a Crow and Northern Cheyenne teenager whose body was found in Hardin, Montana in 2013.
But it's frustrating that every year we mark this day and every year families are in the same boat they were the year before. And that's just unacceptable. There's something critically wrong with our justice system if families of missing and murdered Native people are in the same position they were a year ago.
Advocacy groups say no meaningful action has come of the federal cold case review teams created in November 2019, and MMIP family members and advocates have not yet been provided a point of contact with the task force. The White House issued a statement on May 5th committing to allocate more resources and work with tribal nations to address the MMIP crisis. The Biden administration has not publicly responded to the statement. In Montana, for National Native News, I'm Caitlin Nicholas.
The U.S. Treasury Department Monday announced the formula for the $20 billion set aside for tribes in the American Rescue Plan to help recover from the pandemic. In a letter and briefing with tribal leaders, the department laid out a timeline, funding formula, and requirements. The plan includes sharing $1 billion equally. The Treasury Secretary will determine how to allocate the rest. Distribution will be based on self-certified tribal enrollment or employment data. Two payments will be made to eligible tribal governments. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme. Support by the Sanoski Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, coming to you live from my homelands of Shirhwitui. We are seeing lower infection rates as COVID-19 vaccinations roll out nationwide. Some tribes are reporting days with no new infections, and many cities are easing restrictions on public gatherings imposed more than a year ago. Live events like the Santa Fe Indian Market are back on the calendar, and people are looking forward to gathering and hanging out together again for many other events too. Offices, movie theaters, and restaurants are drawing people back in, but there are still some safety precautions that need to be considered. And when it comes to places of work, employers are having to create workspace and workplace safety policies, and some are mandating vaccinations. Public spaces are also implementing safety protocols. And today we're checking in on how close we are to pre-pandemic speeds and what considerations remain. You can give us a call and join our discussion by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today we're going to start off in Tama, Iowa. With us today is Azadeh Tavakoli, and she is a director of development for the National Native American Human Resources Association. And she is of Meskwaki descent. It's our pleasure to have her here with us. Azadeh, welcome to Native America Calling.
Good morning, Tara. Thank you for the invite.
And so, Azadeh, I know a lot of people have seen different work environments this past year, and then even as we kicked into the new one. And so just want to just kind of touch ground with what we are seeing in terms of workplace and considerations that are being put on the table, and how employers are maneuvering through this and a lot of bringing a lot of people back to work. What are some of the big things that we are seeing in this arena?
Oh, definitely. First and foremost, I think we as employers in Indian country, as we think about coming back to work, want to acknowledge the year that we've come through, the individuals and families that have been affected, and to celebrate the fact that we are resilient and we can get through this together, and we have to adapt in ways we probably never thought of adapting. Some of the workplace considerations, it's really great to know that we have been able to find ways to remote work when some of us probably didn't think that was a possibility in our tribal entities, and to be able to meet in virtual spaces and to allow those new technologies to come into our workplace. So it is, some wonderful things have come about during the year, and thinking, are we going to be implementing these going forward? Taking a look at some of the remote work policies, the meeting spaces. I know some of our tribal entities are really remote, so I think it is some nice options that we have on the table.
And just considering all these different things, what about the return to the office? What are some of the things that employers are having to consider?
Definitely. Some of the policies that I think we should consider as we come back to work, not only are we wearing our masks and being safe and having safe social distancing, it's ensuring our policies are up to date. Some of the policies that we would definitely want to take a look at are our leave policies. We were able to really test our leave policies these last year. And are there any amendments that we need to make to allow our employees to have a safe return to work and also being able to accommodate anything that comes along? Another one that comes to mind is, as we start thinking about coming back, travel has been something we all probably have been used to doing. How are we going to allow travel policies going forward, both for personal use and for work policies?
And break that down. What are we talking about here? What are some of the things that need to be considered with that?
So like our leave policies, you definitely want to build in your sick leave time. If you don't have it, a lot of tribes have PTO hours, making sure that there's significant time in there for your new staff members. A lot of times you have new staff members that are coming along that don't have leave practices. Is there something that we're building in to build in that safety policy for them to ensure that not only are you protecting your new workers, but your current staff? So, and a lot of tribes can get creative with leave donation policies on people who have surplus leave policies to be able to accommodate somebody who may be in need of those. And as far as travel, a lot of tribes are debating, are we going to allow travel and how soon? Some are definitely keeping on the conservative side and still limiting travel in the 2021 year. But if you do lighten it up, are you going to have restrictions when they come back? Who's allowed to go? Who's allowed to? And what for what particular purposes? Are they on a need basis, or are we going to be a little bit more free like we were pre-pandemic?
And so knowing the answer to all of those, what are some of the critical questions that employers need to consider on, you know, just finding that out? What are all the things you got to put on the table to say, okay, we're going to go this way or we're going to go that way?
And I think it all comes back to the community, because your community is who you're protecting and where is their ability to go through. Like here we have a lot of community members that travel quite a bit and our COVID rates are really low. So I think their ability to have travel probably might be able to come forward a little bit sooner than some. And there are some tribal communities that are a lot more reserved where they're not going to be able to have those travel policies. So I think it all comes back to making sure that we're taking a look at our root communities to ensure that we're protecting and making sure that we're still moving forward with our business going forward.
And when we talk about returning to the workspace, what are some of the things and that, you know, employers should be considering? Even, you know, just people feeling safe at work. What are some of the things that really need to be talked about?
Definitely. Some of the things that you want to talk about are having rules ideally laid out for everyone ahead of time. What is your bandwidth and where are we going to lay out? If people they have a fever, how long do you have to wait before you come back to work? Making sure that if you travel out of state, do you have any time limitations before you come back into the office? Like outlining each and every one of those rules that are comfortable for your workplace and making sure that everybody understands that policy coming forward. I know a lot of people created policies in 2020, but we want to update it for where we're currently feeling in the 2021 year and making sure that we walk forward together. But understanding what those policies are paramount to making sure that your policies are enforced equally across the board. Also making sure that you follow through with that with manager training. A lot of times your managers are your frontline staff. They're the ones that have to be the enforcers of a lot of those rules. So making sure that you have the time that you've built in to teach your supervisors to be able to enforce those rules. Maybe even taking the time to build in some of those policies, like disciplinary notices, should anybody not follow the mask mandate, having template forms created so you can go ahead and have everything ready should it happen. And a lot of times you have training that you do in person, but a lot of times during the COVID year, we've gone virtual. So if you needed to have training virtually, I think that's a good option for them, not only for the employees, but for your managers as well.
Thanks for that. And if you have any questions, you can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. You can ask them to Azadeh. She's here the full hour. And Azadeh, what about on the employee side? And if they feel that their employer is not being safe, is not cleaning up good enough, any thoughts?
Definitely. First and foremost, you always want to advocate with your manager and follow your chain of command. Sometimes those chain of commands can go a different way, but always advocate with your HR offices as well to make sure they can help not only enforce the rules in your department, but also make sure that everybody understands everything. And ask for your extra cleaning supplies and your extra masks to make sure that when you do return back to work, if you're already there, you feel safe while you're there. And hopefully you can build a great line of communication with your HR professionals.
And what kind of, you know, rights do employees have? What if there is no HR they can reach out to?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. If you do not have an HR, always, or hopefully you have a chain of command that would go through your supervisor. And if hopefully your supervisor listens, but if not, they go through your next supervisor or their boss. But always, we do have our councils and our business leadership that we always want to advocate with as well if you run into difficulties. But just make sure you properly follow your chain of command. Don't jump too fast.
Some of the new inductees into the National Native American Hall of Fame this year include entrepreneur Dave Anderson of Famous Dave's Barbecue, former U.S. Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell, and poet Joy Harjo. We'll talk with the creators of the award about the importance of recognizing Native achievement. That's on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Masada Pueblo, and we are talking about returning to regular daily activities, whether it's in the office or going to a movie theater or an indoor restaurant. Are you excited or hesitant about in-person events? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today on the line out of Tama, Iowa, is Azadeh Tavakoli. She is a director of development for the National Native American Human Resources Association. And Azadeh, before the break, you were telling us a little bit, too, about workers' rights. And is there anything you want to continue with that?
No, definitely. Just wanted to touch base to become your own advocate and protect not only yourself, but those around you. And if you have any problems along the way, make sure that you go through your advocate and your chain of command. And you've always got some great individuals in human resource that are always going to be there for you.
Well, thank you for that. And we are considering workplaces, but we're also considering two entertainment spaces. And to jump into those considerations, we're going to go to an individual who's joining us today out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. On the line is Jeer Anderson, and he is the lead singer for the Jeer Project and founder of Native Guitars Tour, and he is Cochiti Pueblo. Our pleasure to have him here with us. Jeer, welcome back to Native America Calling.
Hello, Tara. How are you doing? And hello to everybody out there in radio land or internet land, I guess.
Yep. Lots of people out there. And so, Jeer, what are some of the things that you're thinking about, you know, even, you know, getting to a point where concerts are rolling back into full swing? What are some of the things you're thinking now?
Yeah, you know, during COVID, you know, with everything shut down, there's a real excitement within me, a lot of energy built up, right? Because we haven't been able to perform live. So, you know, I'm just trying to be excited about, you know, what lies ahead, but also at the same time, be aware of where we are, you know, as a community, and trying to be responsible as, you know, not only a band leader, but kind of the leader of this organization that we run that puts on events and stuff like that, to make sure that, you know, when we do go back to live spaces, that we're, you know, aware of making it safe for people and making sure, you know, wherever we are during, you know, when things do start up, you know, what the current safety, you know, like concerns that are out there, whether it's wearing masks, having sanitizers, or, you know, whatever those rules are going to be, that we're aware of them and we're practicing them. And we're kind of setting the example, you know, as we come out of this. That's real important for me, you know, with, you know, bringing people into Native Guitars Tour. You know, we've been doing a lot of virtual stuff, but as we come out of that, you know, just that we're kind of setting an example and providing a safe space for our community of musicians, and also for, you know, people that are going to come out to support, you know, fans and family and friends and, you know, all that that come out to live events. So, you know, just really thinking about that, you know, how we're going to approach, and, you know, doing a lot of research, following, you know, not just local concerns, but also at a national level, you know, talking a lot with industry people, how the bigger industry is going to be coming out of this, and how they're going to be working towards, you know, making sure safe spaces are provided.
And what has been the impact on just the entertainment industry and, you know, even the venues? Any thoughts or knowledge on that, Jeer?
Yeah, so, you know, everybody pretty much shut down. You know, there was everybody pretty much at the beginning. We had our tours scheduled, you know, throughout the year, throughout 2020. People had tour schedules lined up. Venues had, you know, artists lined up for the year. Generally, when you're booking, most venues do like 3 to 6 months. And then the bigger venues are even like a year, year and a half out on booking. So, you know, when COVID came, just things shut down. You know, there was like no notices, no emails went out or anything. It's just like everybody knew that these spaces were closed. So I didn't reach out to venues. Venues didn't reach out to me. It was just kind of like this understanding, okay, we're shut down until further notice. But now as we come back up, you know, I've been planning for the rest of 2021 into 2022 and reconnecting with those, with that network, you know, within the industry and finding that not everybody is there, you know, and that's kind of sad. But, you know, I think that's a lot of room for new things to blossom and new seeds to be planted. So I think, you know, as we come out of this, there's a lot of energy, I think, within the industry, you know, of live events that is going to blossom with some new entities and, you know, some new ways that we're going to go about things within the industry. So, you know, a lot of that discussion is going on with industry people that are, you know, we're trying to communicate and, you know, a lot of work's been going on behind the scenes, too. I think people are just really developing, you know, what they were doing prior to COVID and have that opportunity to kind of take a few breaths and work on those, you know, those models, those business models and those even as musicians, you know, working on their artistry and stuff like that. So I think it was healthy, you know, to have that break and to kind of sit back and contemplate where you were prior and the direction you want to take as we come out.
And I'm also wondering too, because there's, you know, as things are opening back up and especially, you know, places where people go for entertainment, these are spaces that people haven't visited for some time and there's going to be limitations. And what are your thoughts on that or words to fans of, you know, if they're at a smaller capacity that not everybody's going to get in and dealing with that, any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think we just have to all be open-minded and realize, you know, that coming out of this, kind of looking back and look at the seriousness of what actually happened, what occurred. You know, we had this virus that hit our communities and we lost a lot of people that are really dear to us, you know, family members, friends, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, you know, a lot of our community was lost. So, you know, as we come out of this, I think, you know, we just need to kind of respect those spaces, you know, respect what is available. And I think communication is going to be a big part of it. You know, that's something I have events that are planned for July, August, you know, some pretty big events. And, you know, I think communication is the big thing because I don't know what those spaces are going to look like, you know, in July and August. So, you know, just communicating right away, hey, we're going to be restricted to whatever limitations we have at that time, you know. And again, just being, I think if everybody's just, you know, has that mindset coming out of it and realize that, you know, where things are just going to be different as far as how those spaces are prior, how they were prior to how they are going to be, you know, coming out of, you know, once things start opening up and, you know, dealing with those limitations. But I think communication is going to be a big part of it. And, you know, just an understanding from the community on those limitations. And so I think that's what I see, you know, as we come out of things and things start opening up and we have to start to deal with, you know, restrictions.
Sure. And something else, just thinking about as we asked our HR expert earlier on, what about the rights of or just considering the musicians themselves? What if there's a venue that doesn't line up with, you know, what a musician feels is safe protocol or the venue opens, everybody comes in and nobody is enforcing some of the things that they've asked patrons to do? What about on the musician side or even leveraging things when you are accepting a booking at a certain venue? Any thoughts in consideration for how to protect the musicians?
Yeah, you know, I'm also a member of the New Mexico Music Commission for the state of New Mexico. Was appointed by our governor last year And we had some discussions on, you know, that exact topic. And, you know, as we enter these spaces, you know, I think it's really going to be up to the people that are putting on the events to kind of hold those venues accountable, you know, and making sure that those safety precautions are there. And also, it's going to take some, you know, activism on musicians themselves to make sure that they're in compliance and they're communicating amongst the group of musicians. You know, like if we see somebody that may not be following what, you know, the community rules should be, we should, you know, speak out and try to communicate that and let them know the importance. So I think it's the responsibility is on both sides, right? It's on, you know, the venues of these events and also on, you know, the artists themselves to make sure that we're holding up our end of the set of safety precautions that are going to be out there. So definitely a work that needs to be on both sides, you know.
Sure. There is so much to consider, and cooperation is a big part of all of this. And Jer, is there any message to musicians you would like to share, just reminding them of things to consider of, you know, when they're taking those gigs or they're booking things, just any advice for them?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think as we come out of COVID, you know, I think the biggest thing is to be responsible and just think of the people who have been supporting you through your career and, you know, wanting what's best for them, because they're the ones that are going to see how you come out of this and are going to support you, you know, in the years to come. So I think just, you know, being very aware of, you know, how you would want your community of your fan base, let's say, you know, their safety and also, you know, the safety of your musicians. There's going to be this real excitement, you know, and I feel it myself, like just to, I want to perform really bad. I want to get back on stage, but, you know, taking a few deep breaths and looking at the bigger picture and say, okay, this is, have a plan set in place, you know, start thinking about, okay, what are the rules? Well, you know, do a little bit of research. There's several communities that have, I look at Austin, website. They have a real good website where they have been performing live, but they have like this set of rules that they kind of follow, abide by as artists. So, you know, doing a little bit of research to see what you can do as a musician to let your fan base know that you care about them and you have their safety in mind. And then as well as, you know, your band or, you know, your musicians that are within your group, making sure that they're safe and they're protected as well, because that's like your family, and you got to make sure that, you know, you take care of both ends, you know. So again, it gets a little bit, the responsibility is really in a lot of places. And I think, you know, venues and artists, we need to work together. We need to communicate and make sure that we make these spaces safe, you know.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Drew Anderson. And if you have any thoughts for him, fellow musicians, what are your thoughts? Where do you stand on all this? Are you ready to get back into those venues? Are you in a place where things have already started up and you want to just give a report on how things have gone? You can give us a ring too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Hang tight, Drew, also on the line with us too. Joining us today is Jamie Schultz, who is the Finance and Development Director of the Southwestern Association for Indian Arts, a.k.a. SWIA. And Jamie is Northern Cheyenne and Sisseton Wahpeton. Our pleasure to have them here. Jamie, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you so much, and thank you for everyone listening to this.
And so, Jamie, we know that we're going to hear details on just exactly what this year's Indian market is going to look like. But just thinking about getting to a place where you're inviting people back in, just any initial comments? Got about a minute before break.
Yes, ma'am. This is very thoughtful. It is based upon the state regulations. And so at this time, those are ever evolving. So we are moving forward planning on this and hoping to have that soon.
Okay. And we're going to hear those details coming up. But, you know, just thinking about where we are and everything that needs to be considered to bring people back to public spaces, what are some of the things you hope people are considering? We are hearing from different folks in the entertainment sector of things, cultural gatherings, as well as the workspaces. And so what are some of the things you hope people who are saying, okay, green light, come on back, what do you hope that they are doing? And maybe you are somebody who is having to make some decisions. What are some of the things that you had to consider, and how did you come up with rules or policies? You can share your thoughts with us today. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And, you know, if you have already opened things up and you've learned some lessons that you think everybody needs to hear, you can give us a ring too. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And employees, when you're getting that green light, what are some of the things you hope are in place? Are you ready to go back? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And what about going back to, you know, those baseball games, concerts? Where are your thoughts? Are you ready to do that? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your call.
As COVID-19 vaccines are becoming available, Americans are eager to learn more, but frustrated about where to find answers. That's why AARP is working to protect Americans 50-plus by connecting you to the latest information. You can learn who's eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine in your state, when, where, and how to get it, and what you might want to discuss with your doctor at aarp.org/vaccineinfo. AARP supports this program.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are focusing on returning to public spaces that were closed or limited because of the pandemic. And there is still time to join our conversation. Join us at 1-800-996-2848, and we look forward to hearing your thoughts today, and you can give us your questions too. We go back to Jamie Schultz, who is the Finance and Development Director of SWIA, the Southwestern Association for Indian Arts. And so, Jamie, tell me more about how things are going to go this year with the Santa Fe Indian Market. I've read that there are limitations on people attending, two-hour windows. Tell me more about all that and how it'll go down.
Thank you, Tara. So it has been interesting, and I think that as it's ever evolving, we are changing and trying to also be very inclusive in this and not to... But we have to actually prioritize safety, and that's safety of our attendees, our artists, as well as our staff and volunteers. So this is a very big process because Indian Market normally, historically, hosts over 120,000 people on that week. So it has been a challenge in a sense to kind of start to create those processes according to state policies and procedures, as well as looking at the artists that have really, really suffered under this pandemic, but wanting to be a good steward. And a lot of the other folks that have spoken on this call have used the word awareness. And so that is something that we are definitely being aware of. Our perceptions and other people's perceptions of what it should look like, we're trying to address those, but with safety as the priority.
And so tell me the details about how this is going to go down. And I mentioned the two-hour window. Explain all that, please.
Yes. So right now we're limited to 500 artists. And this is based upon, we're hoping, because even right now our state policy on this is not fully defined. So we're really looking towards the governor for her actual information and her updates. And so, but we're being hopeful and hosting 500 artists. That will be in a limited area. As everybody knows, Santa Fe Plaza is just a beautiful area. We are not fully, haven't completely defined what those ticketing as well as the fencing will look like. This could change. We've heard from various other people, but we are planning on having a full day ticket to a 2-hour ticket, depending on the time frame. And at this point, it could be a free ticket. So we're hearing a lot of feedback from our artists. We are hearing a lot of feedback from our guests, and we're taking that all into consideration as we're developing and keeping this evolving. And I think that's the key word, is it's an evolution that is actually happening day by day, because those procedures and those procedures and changes are happening hour by hour sometimes. So, you know, that's been one of the things too, is just to be very conscientious. Once again, safety is paramount. We don't know where we'll be in August. We have a lot of hopes and dreams, but yet at the same time, we're trying to be realistic and keep people safe.
And, you know, I just imagine anytime that I hear that there are people who are planning an event, going out, because you don't know. You don't know where things are going to be when the event actually arrives. And especially, you know, if statuses are changing in your state. And so I feel for people who are planning events and having to consider unknowns, where usually you got planning down to the T and you're just kind of knocking things out. And this one, you just don't know. And enforcing things so that they are safe. Is there anything you want to share with that, Jamie, or even, you know, if the window, and I've seen a lot of dialogue on social media about this too, of how things will be enforced. How do you know somebody's been there for 2 hours? Any thoughts?
There will be color coding systems that we have thought about, as well as a scanning system. And we're hoping to call upon our attendees and also our artists' responsibility with this as well, and hopefully have communication, and that this is a community event. And as much as we don't want this free market to be fenced off, this would be the first year that that would ever be done, if it is going to happen, that we're looking at all of those logistics and hoping to be accountable to each other. So we're really wanting to create that community atmosphere about safety. And it's something that we're absolutely looking into from every aspect. In enforcement of that, we're hoping that people hold personal responsibility and accountability, because we're being required to hold that by the state as well. But we were definitely thinking about our volunteers, making sure that that's a safe place to come back to. We've depended on volunteerism historically throughout this organization, and really, really want to make sure that that's safe for them, the artists, and the attendees. So those are ever-evolving discussion points. And as far as being completely clear on that, you know, I always point to the state guidelines, because within this, we are working with what we know now. Because we don't know, we are trying to think through every possible scenario in order to have these artists on the plaza in any way, shape, or form, in order to, you know, still keep our 99th Indian market, although under the pandemic, it is going to be different.
And Jamie, finally, is there just anything you want to offer to other large event organizers, lessons learned, or something that nobody told you, but you found out the hard way? Is there just any advice like that you'd like to leave us with?
Well, we've definitely, under Kimberly Pion, our executive director, innovation is very, very key, as well as community partnerships. And so that has been one of the incredible aspects of having to work through this, is finding out from other folks. So if we can share information, or folks have information to share with us, we are definitely very, very open and receptive of hearing comments and viewpoints, and even sometimes complaints, you know, and I don't want to say sometimes, even complaints, because we learn from those. This is a challenging year. And so we just want to step out in front of this. Being one of the largest Native American art markets in the world, we have a responsibility. And I know that that's been said on by several different callers. And that responsibility, Kimberly takes very, very seriously, because it's a stewardship, not only for the collectors, the artists, the volunteers, but for our staff as well.
All right. Thank you for that. And with us on the line today is Jamie Schultz with SWIA. If you have any thoughts for her, you can dial into 1-800-996-2848. Also here today out of Portland, Oregon, is Dr. Richard Lehman, and he is a chief medical officer for the Oregon Health Authority. Our pleasure to have him here. Dr. Lehman, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thanks so much. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
And so, Dr. Lehman, definitely want to tap into your expertise about thinking about bringing people into spaces, bringing larger numbers back together in public spaces and in workspaces. And you just heard from one of the larger events that goes on that brings in Native people together, the Santa Fe Indian Market. And then we also heard earlier from a musician who also supports other musicians and coming to venues. And so thinking of all of these spaces that will be populating again, what are some of the things that you definitely think people need to be considering, whether it's the people who are attending, going back to work, or the people who are inviting people in for entertainment or back to the workplace? Anything you want to share?
Well, actually, Tara, I can think of several things. We do have some vaccines that are pretty effective. And so unless people have a known serious allergy to something in the vaccine, it really makes sense to get it. The risk is low, and these vaccines are very effective in protecting people. Also, I think masks are still a good idea. Masks are the way that we protect other people. A vaccine protects you, a mask protects others. And this is important in the workplace, but it's also important when we're around elders because we've got to protect them. Also, just avoiding cramming too many people together. I mean, up here in Oregon, at least, we just had the lightest flu season ever. And that's because a lot of people were being careful and they were keeping their distance, they were washing their hands, and they were wearing a mask.
And Dr. Lehman, anything specific for the workplace? Things about bringing people, you know, in close proximity for hours at a time? Any thoughts?
Some of those things that we just talked about, I think, are important. Another thing in the workplace, I'm really hopeful that employers are going to have policies in place that help employees do the right thing so that they can stay home if they're sick or if they've been exposed to COVID. Nobody wants a big outbreak in the workplace, and paid sick leave when somebody needs it, that's a public health strategy.
And what are some of the things that you hope employers are putting into place in terms of policies or protocols?
Well, some of those things that we just talked about, I think masks definitely still make sense because you can protect other people that way. I think we don't want people, it makes sense to look at what's the level of COVID illness in the community, because it would be good to have things under pretty good control before you open up and get a whole bunch of people together. And I think it's also worth looking at whether people can do their jobs without all getting together in one place in a small room at the work site. Because if you can do things without having people all gather in a small room, it's probably worth waiting until more people are protected by the COVID vaccine.
And Dr. Lehman, when are we going to get to a time where, you know, people really are going to feel safe? And I guess that's a personal one. So maybe more on the side of, when do you think we will get to a point where some of this, you know, will dissipate? Are we ever going to see that time, or is it always going to be this way where always on guard? Any thoughts?
If you're talking about COVID specifically, I guess we have to remember that every year we have a flu season. Every year is a bad flu year, with, interestingly enough, the exception of this past one. And if we all just get in the habit of doing things in a way, it's not a huge burden on us, but if we can do things in a way where we don't spread illness to other people if we're sick, that's huge. And if that can just be part of the way we do things, because that's taking care of other people, that's taking care of our elders, I think it's a step in the right direction, and it's a healthy thing for people. It's a healthy thing for the community.
And then we talk about gathering in large spaces. What are some of the things to just consider on people who are attending, or things that people who are attending that, you know, need to be considered, or even asking them to be vigilant about what they're doing? Any thoughts?
Well, as I said, I think masks still make sense because that's the way you can protect other people. You can protect yourself by getting vaccinated, and we think that also helps to protect other people because it looks like a person who's vaccinated is less likely to spread infection to somebody else. And also just, you know, this is part of this is the planners of the activities, and Jamie was just talking about this, but making sure that you don't have everybody all crammed in together into one place. If we can have a little space between people, that's just safer.
And any protocols that you've seen that are just really amazing that you think you'd like to share with people that you think are really keeping people safe?
Well, I haven't done a lot of work developing specific policies, but, you know, I'm familiar with what's in Oregon, and the Oregon Occupational Safety and Health folks have done a lot of work on this, and they have guidance around this, and it's on their website. So that's a place that people can go. Also, in different states, you know, folks may have somewhat different guidance that fits for their area. So I think it's good to take a look at those. I recognize tribal businesses don't necessarily have to follow state guidance, but I still think it's worth a look.
And for organizers who are planning events, any advice on where they can turn to if they have questions or even want to protect themselves legally in covering all the bases in terms of, you know, making safe, healthy environments? Any thoughts or resources you'd like to share?
Well, I think both state public health is a place to look, but also the folks, as I said, in occupational safety and health. And there's the federal OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, that has guidance on this. And then also a lot of states have their own occupational safety and health administrations. And they have materials on their website that are really helpful.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Dr. Richard Lehman with us. And Azadeh Tavakoli also here with us from the National Native American Human Resource Association. Azadeh, are there any places where you'd like to direct folks to where they can get more information if they have questions about, you know, how to proceed or setting up policies? Any contacts?
Yeah, definitely. Some of our contacts that we have is we have our website, NAHARA's website. NNAHRA, we have COVID resources, but also encouragement to become creative within your own department's policies. There are rewards programs for people who have encouraging vaccines, so I'm really excited about that. So keep being creative.
Okay, and give that website one more time.
www.NNAHRA. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you to everybody that we heard from in the hour. Azadeh Tavakoli, Dr. Richard Lehman. Also thanks to Jer Anderson, as well as Jamie Schultz from the Southwest, from SWIA. Thank you for joining us today. We got to wrap things up here, but we hope you will join us again tomorrow as we sign on air. To talk about those who are being inducted into the National Native Hall of Fame. We hope you'll join us. And if you want more information about our program, you can always go to our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And you can even find archives of any of the shows you've missed there. Just type in keywords. You can look for stuff that way too. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Support by Amerind. Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerant works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
How mitakuyapiki. As we age, healthcare coverage is more important than ever. Contact your local Indian healthcare provider for more information. Visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.